Okay, everybody, I think we're ready to move to our third and final roundtable. The topic here, and as a couple of people alluded in some of the previous World Cafe that we participated in, there were certainly allusions and some points that maybe set up the conversation we're about to have. But the topic is overcoming barriers between researchers, practitioners, and community. We'll have, again, three speakers. The moderator for this session will be Dr. Andrew G. Ryder, who is Associate Professor of Psychology at Concordia, where he directs the Culture, Health, and Personality Lab. His current research focuses on the ways in which cultural and individual variables interact to predict symptom presentation and depression among Chinese, Koreans, and Euro-Canadians. He's also involved in combining cultural psychology, cultural psychiatry, and psychological anthropology perspectives to develop a cultural competence approach for Canadian psychologists. The three speakers, we'll start off with Ms. Jennifer Johnson. She's the Executive Director of the Community Health and Social Services Network, which is an organization devoted to the improvement of access to health and social services in English in Quebec. She works primarily with community-based organizations from across the province to better engage locally with public partners to improve access. The development of a knowledge base is a pillar of this activity. Dr. Estelle Chamus obtained her PhD in cellular biology at the University of Sherbrooke in 2002. She has published several journal articles in the endocrinology of stress and bone physiology. She began teaching in 2005 and is currently Associate Professor of Biology at Bishop University. She's also a member of the Psychological Health and Well-Being Cluster Research at Bishop's. I'm just reminded a little bit of Norman's approach with the kind of ecology. He was talking about fish in a pond and words and so on. So there's more overlaps than we know. The third speaker in this panel is Ms. Guerfo Roberts. She's a well-speaking senior lecturer at the Centre for Health-Related Research at the University of Bangor in Wales in the UK. Her research focuses on enhancing and implementing the evidence base for language-appropriate practice in healthcare. She leads LLAIS, the Language Awareness Methodology Support Hub, for the National Institute for Social Care and Health Research, and is a member of the Welsh Government Task Group for Welsh in the Health Service and Academic Board of, and you're going to have to help me with the name of the institution, Coleg Simreg, I'm not even sure of the last one. Maybe you can repeat for us, and you know if there's a meaning attached, please share it with us. So those are our three participants in the final round table. I guess we're going to go in the order, are we, that I read them off. So Jennifer, please. And I'll turn over to Andrew.
So, well. Oh, okay.
I have this question.
Yes, all right. No, I slide. No, I know slides for me. I'm easy. Well, I didn't have a lot of time to prepare because I really didn't know I was going to be here until Wednesday last week, so I apologize, there's no PowerPoint presentation. But my objective with you today is to talk about how we as an organization have addressed this idea of overcoming barriers between the community, the research community, and practitioners. Because this has been an important concept for my organization for quite a long time. For those of you that don't know the CHSSN, we're an organization, as my bio identified, that focuses on developing access to English language health and social services in the province of Quebec. We were founded in 2000. My partner, many of you know, Jim Carter. He is my policy advisor and has been basically the father of CHSSN since its inception. And due to his wisdom and some of the work that we've done, the knowledge base, the evidence-based community development has been how we have approached the improvement of access to services across the province. We realize that in order to build legitimacy around these English-speaking communities across the province, they needed to have to become the expert on themselves. And to do that, they needed to develop a knowledge base on their own communities to the best of their ability. Back in 2000 or 2002, there wasn't a whole lot of information on specific communities. Canadian Heritage had done a very good job at developing the statistics on a regional basis, but very little information about the English-speaking community on a more local basis. And for those of you that don't know the statistics, there are over a million English-speaking first official language persons in the province of Quebec. As I mentioned earlier, approximately 600,000 living, you know, in the Greater Montreal area, and another 300 or now 400,000 people living off the island of Montreal and don't have access to the health institutions and services like Anglophones in the Montreal region do have access to. And I also would like to point out, through our research, we've identified that even on the island of Montreal, there are territories that have very difficult time accessing services in English, for example, the east end of Montreal. So we identified from the very beginning that an evidence base and knowledge base was, you know, a key to the development strategy of our communities. However, we didn't necessarily do that in collaboration with the university sector. We did it mostly through our own, you know, hiring of consultants and the development of a knowledge base ourselves, using Stats Canada information, and also we did a perceptions survey over time. We did we surveyed 3,000 Anglophones across the province three times, and we now have a longitudinal analysis of perceptions of access to health and social services by Anglophones that has been very important body of knowledge for our community in terms of improving access. In addition to using an evidence base as, you know, a priority for our development, we also dedicated resources that we received from Health Canada to develop the knowledge base around the English-speaking community. So we actually had an envelope that was called knowledge base development, knowledge development. And within that volet of our work, we did several different types of activities to promote research in the area of English language health and social services. For example, we started off by creating an in-house research committee. So we had like a little think tank within our own small community in terms of, you know, how do we promote research within the larger English-speaking community with our own means, within our own resources. We developed a 5-year action plan with this committee and identified, you know, how we could improve research in this area. We also, you know, as part of this, we also developed a newsletter that we've published every year called NetLink that I'm hoping that most of you get a copy of. It's an electronic newsletter in terms of what research has happened on the English-speaking community on health and social services in the past year. And, you know, we see this as, you know, our one connection and dissemination of information to the research community around resources that are available on the English-speaking population in Quebec. We also invested, we had a, and I'm sad to see, I think Normand has left, but we had an important investment with the INSBQ, where we developed a relationship, a very, very good relationship with an INSBQ department that devoted its time to exploring language as a health determinant. This was a first for the ministry. They had never discussed language as a health determinant prior to this investment that we made at the INSPQ. And it opened up a lot of important questions, I think, at the ministry level, at the INSPQ in particular, around how they look at the population. Prior to this, they were comparing Francophones in Quebec to Francophones in France. They weren't even comparing, you know, the Francophone community at all in terms of language. And they weren't even really looking at Allophone communities at that point either. So it really started or stimulated a conversation at the ministry level about language as a health determinant and how it affects how people access the health system. So we had a very, very fruitful relationship developed between this because of this partnership. And we had a tripartite committee, CHSSN, the ministry, and the INSPQ, that, you know, directed, you know, at a very, you know, high level. I certainly was not involved in any of the research that Normand and his team were doing, but, you know, we had an opportunity to help pose the direction that this research was going in, and so it was a very, very, very fruitful outcome with regards to those types of resources and in that mid-year, because there really was no discussion going on prior to that. And we try to be the dirty shirt in everybody's laundry that just never goes away. We try to be there at all the conversations and the discussions and the opportunities like today to just make sure that the conversation around the needs of the community stay on the table, because, you know, it can be very easily, you know, put aside for, you know, much, you know, bigger issues, and you know, we just always want to make sure that the English-speaking community in Quebec's issues around access to services and, you know, health status remain a priority for all of our discussions, like our discussion today. We also had a couple of very successful community-university collaborations. I don't know if anybody in the room is connected to the Diabetes Project that, yes, Antonia, yes, that was worked with the, I think there were four English-speaking communities across the province of Quebec and McGill University, and using Blackberries to manage diabetes from a distance basically, you know, information technologies, and the community got involved and identified. And I have to say, just as an illustration, that relationship has actually evolved with one of our communities in the sense that they're now using telemedicine to reduce the amount of time, the number of times an individual has to fly off the Lower North Shore to do pre-surgical meetings and analysis. They actually now use video conferencing and telephone to do those pre-surgical activities for those individuals. So reducing cost to the system, reducing stress to the individual. So, you know, the really important long-term benefits came out of a research project where the community was involved, and it was an issue that was really important to the community as well. Diabetes is something that all of our communities are faced with, as most rural and remote communities can identify. So how do we push this further? You know, how do you try to bring community and university interests together and, you know, make that opportunity for collaboration more prevalent? It's a tough question because, you know, you have two disparate communities with two very different agendas with regards to, you know, the research community having, you know, their specific funds that they can go after with specific topics that, you know, the requirements that they have. And then you have a community that has very specific needs and very, sometimes small populations that doesn't interest university level research when you're talking about, you know, 100 people on the Gaspé Coast. You know, it doesn't produce enough statistics to be valid, and, you know, there's a whole dichotomy of questions that are difficult to overcome. What I think that I think that my advice here is that communities, and because of the work that we've been doing with the networks over the past, you know, now since 2003, so 10 years, these communities, they've grown up using evidence-based development. They understand the need for an evidence base. They may not have the understanding or the nuance of, you know, university level research, but they get the value that can come out of connecting with a university and the benefits of being connected to university. So, and they want more. They want more information about the health status of their communities. They want more information about these difficult questions that they're raising in their communities. And some of these questions they've tried, but they can't answer, and they need the professional support to do that. So I think that there's, the opportunity is growing and developing. And what we need to do is to create opportunities to share between those two universes and a similar type of activity where you have a community as well as university presentation, I think would be a really valuable initiative. And having, you know, opportunities to talk and collaborate and, you know, talk about interests and funding possibilities, etc. Continuity of funding for universities around official language minority issues in Quebec is also something that's really, really important. Richard told me something funny. He's like, you know, if you put, you study Aboriginal access to health and services in the Aboriginal community on your CV, that's great. You put the study of Francophone minority communities' access to health services in your CV, it's great. But if you put access to health and social services for the English-speaking community in Quebec on your CV, people just kind of look at you with their eyes crossed. You know, they're kind of like, huh, what? You know, what do you mean? There's no issue. You know, so there's a real education that needs to be made with regards to the need for research dollars, the validity of researchers to go into this direction, and for it to become a respected funding source. I've got 2 minutes. So recognizing that you're not working in a void with the communities. The communities really are prepared to work with, I think. We have some really interesting examples of the INSPQ working with our communities and developing community profiles. And the university, Concordia University, working with community in Laval, developing community profiles. And the outcomes for both in terms of the INSPQ and the Concordia and also the community for those initiatives was really, really valuable. And so to close, I just want to put out three questions that I remember in the last, like, 5 years coming up that, you know, the communities themselves have said, you know, we need answers to this and we just can't do it on our own. One of them was, why is there such a disproportionate share of English-speaking youth in youth protection services in towns in the eastern townships? They can't answer that question without support from maybe a university-level research. Why is there such a high proportion of breast cancer in villages on the Lower North Shore? We went up there with the provincial committee last year, and a professor from McGill University was with us, and they sat down and showed him the statistics on breast cancer of women in three or four villages in the Lower North Shore, and he was just, this can't be. You know, it was like 300% higher than the general population. But they don't have answers because it's very, you know, we're talking about 600 people in a very remote community in the Lower Shore. You know, they can't answer these questions without somebody taking interest in it. And last was, how can telemedicine improve the health outcomes for people normally required to travel great distances for treatment? You know, I think, you know, those are just three things that I remember coming up from the communities that I had discussions with. And, you know, those are the types of things that I could see relationships developing between the two.